When you need to know what's going on in the UK, David Curtin has his finger on the pulse. Today's News Talk, TNT.
Hello and welcome to the David Curtin Show. Now, this is a fantastic week and I'm very excited because tomorrow is St. George's Day and I'm getting ready for that. That is the patron saint and St. George, who is England's patron saint, and we should be celebrating. However, you may think from reading the news headlines this weekend that it isn't April the 22nd today and the 23rd tomorrow, but it's more like April the 1st, April Fool's Day, because Sir Keir Starmer, the leader of the Labour Party, has written an article in The Telegraph, which has been picked up and repeated in lots of other media outlets, saying that the Labour Party is the true party of English patriotism. Yes, pull the other one, Sir Keir. The Labour Party has been doing everything it possibly can to undermine the concept of Britishness or Englishness and rail against it for the last 30 years and undermine our culture. Take, for example, the Labour Mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, who I know very well because I was in the London Assembly for 5 years. Now, there was a British flag outside City Hall when he was there, but they also put up a EU flag in a more prominent position, as well as a third flagpole that had anything on it from an LGBTQIAP rainbow to a flag of another visiting country, whether it was Pakistan or India or whatever. Very, very rarely was there anything to do with London, more less England. I never saw the St. George's flag outside City Hall at all in my 4 years of being there. I went to City Hall recently to hand in the nomination papers for the London elections. There was a British flag there. There was also a Ukraine flag there. Why on earth there's a Ukraine flag outside London City Hall, I don't know. But this is a party, Sadiq Khan represents this, that will celebrate almost everything apart from our native English culture in the England or British culture, more widely, including Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland. Now, let's look at some other people in the Labour Party over the years. Famously, Emily Thornberry mocked St. George's flags outside some council homes in Rochester in Kent. That was 10 years ago. She was briefly suspended from the Labour Party. She was the shadow Home Secretary, I should say. She's now the shadow Attorney General for the Labour Party, so she's back in the cabinet. More worryingly than that, though, Naz Shah famously retweeted a deplorable tweet that said the white girls in Rotherham and elsewhere should shut their mouths for the sake of diversity. She deleted that tweet quite quickly, but it was obviously something that she did leave up on her Twitter, as it was at the time, or X, for a period of time. This indicates a disdain for victims of real crime, which the police forces in places where it's happened, South Yorkshire Police, obviously Rotherham, Greater Manchester Police, Rochdale and others, did not act to help the victims of grooming gangs because they did not want to be seen as racist by helping white people, the indigenous population of England and the United Kingdom. We have David Lammy, who is still in the shadow cabinet. He's the shadow foreign secretary. Recently, he was on a radio interview and he lamented that when he went to Sussex, he felt like he was the only black person in the town. I think he was talking about the town where his in-laws lived in. Why on earth you need to comment on that and say that as though that's some kind of bad thing? I don't know. But there is all these people connected with the Labour Party who push critical race theory. Now, the latest thing is they want to decolonize the countryside because the countryside apparently is a white space that is racist. So, you know, these are the kind of people that you get associated with those liberal leftists who are always around the Labour Party. So this move to try to position Labour as a patriotic English party a couple of days before St. George's Day is completely laughable. And I think most people are going to see straight through this and laugh right back in Sir Keir Starmer's face. This is today's News Talk, TNT.
Talk that matters.
For once, we just need to do what's best for this damn country and not what's best for the world.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the David Curtin Show. And Gemma Cooper is here to talk about the latest in the UK news headlines. Welcome to the show, Gemma.
Thank you, David. Yeah, this is the time of the show where I bring you a little snapshot of some of the bigger stories in the UK here on TNT. Within the next 20 minutes, Rishi Sunak is set to give an impromptu kind of surprise kind of press conference. He's set to address the nation. It's thought that the Rwanda bill will be the main focus of this press conference. But I think also it's an attempt to boost his kind of PR standing ahead of local elections on May the 2nd, just a few weeks away now, and also an important Tory by-election on that very same day. He could be facing a confidence vote if the local elections don't go as planned, and we could be looking at possibly a new leader in time for the general election of the Conservative Party. We keep a close eye on that. Be interesting to see how he approaches this press conference this morning. And Rwanda, of course, is expected to go through this week when they can agree, the Lords and the Commons, on the final wording. The chief of the Metropolitan Police in London, Sir Mark Rowley, is due to meet with the Home Secretary and the Policing Minister, possibly later today, certainly this week, to talk about the anti-Semitism claims that have been rocking the Metropolitan Police since the video emerged of them talking to a Jewish man saying he shouldn't go anywhere near a pro-Palestinian rally because he was openly Jewish. It would have been antagonistic. They did apologise for that, but then they had to apologise again for kind of doubling down on their original remarks. Lots of claims that Mark Rowley should go, he should fall on his sword. And a shocking report from a former prison governor into the state of UK prisons saying that they're falling apart, rampant drug taking, rampant violence, rampant radicalization from some Muslim gangs within the prison system. The former prison governor accuses current prison bosses of being woke and saying they'd rather take the knee than tackle the very serious problems now sweeping through our prison system in the UK. Just some statistics there for this headline. Apparently one prison officer is assaulted, sometimes seriously so, requiring hospitalization every half an hour across the UK in the working day. So reform much needed. Whether it will happen, this former governor says he's not quite sure.
Well, thanks, Gemma. I mean, those are three very, very interesting stories you brought there. The one that I actually been looking into a little bit more is in the middle one you talked about. This is the happening at the pro-Palestine marches. I call them ceasefire marches or ceasefire rallies. But some people are trying to taint them as hate marches, right up to Suella Braverman and other people, pro-Palestine or pro-Hamas hate marches. I don't like the idea of smearing things as hate when this is just a general smear that is put out. If someone is genuinely inciting crime, if someone's genuinely inciting violence, genuinely harassing or abusing someone, yeah, fine, you talk about the individuals. But to me, you know, there are some people on the fringes who don't behave themselves well, like there are in any march you get of a certain size. But to me, they just look like they're mostly peaceful marches. But this has been a story. This Jewish man, clearly wearing a kippah on his head, was stopped by the Metropolitan Police and an officer there. This altercation was filmed. But it turns out that this was not just some random person who was just happening to be in the area and wanting to cross the road. This person was Gideon Falter, who is the chief executive of the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism. I assume that he was there because there was a pro-Palestine march in that place in that time. I mean, I don't know for sure. It could be there randomly, but I very much doubt that he was. He probably It looks to me like he was there. He could, you know, obviously respond to that himself because the march was there. And there were people there filming him. So the police, yes, they quite rightly, in my opinion, apologized for calling him openly Jewish. And, you know, if you say something like that on camera, you're obviously going to get slaughtered. It's the wrong thing to say. I think what they wanted him to do was move out of the area, not go into the main body of the march, because if he did that with a camera crew, he would obviously antagonize somebody. And probably, you know, that might have been the intention. Again, I'd have to ask him on here to see why he was there at that time and at that place. But it does look like with these marches going on, there are people who turn up with camera crews. They try to get into arguments and then they post them on the internet and they say, oh, look, I was here at this march and I had this argument, and aren't these people terrible? I mean, this isn't just, you know, something that happens at the pro-Palestine marches. This happens at all marches all over the place. It's nothing new. You know, I would call this outrage farming. If this is actually what happens, this is not an organic interaction. This is something that was, in my view, quite probably set up, and they were looking for an altercation for the hits on the internet. And of course, it has created outrage. A lot of people are now saying, oh, isn't this terrible? The marches are anti-Semitic, ban them. And this takes focus away from the actual purpose of the march, which is to say, look, the nation of Israel, the nation that calls itself Israel, has killed 35,000 plus people, mostly women and children. They're ethnically cleansing Gaza. You can call that a genocide. It's the early stages of a genocide. And we need to stop this from happening. All the focus is taken away from that and the horror of what's going on in Gaza, and is on this like small altercation between the head of an NGO, an activist NGO, and a hapless policeman on that day. Sorry, I've spoken for a long time, Gemma, but it's something I've been looking into. What are your thoughts about my opinions there?
Well, interestingly enough, there's a big inquiry launched today, which will run until next April. I think it's called the Times Review into Policing and Justice. And it's because a YouGov survey has been done and it shows public confidence in the UK police is at an all-time low, with only half of the public trusting the police at all, and many calling for reform. Now, it's sometimes the case, isn't it? I was discussing this earlier with Sonia Poulton. Be careful what you wish for. You know, you see more and more images of the police being kind of caught on the back foot with situations like this, which could well have been engineered. And then everyone says, oh, look at the police, aren't they awful? We need to reform the policing system. And then you get something a lot more draconian and a lot more heavy-handed. And it's a bit like, you know, the NHS is not fit for purpose. You can argue that's by design. Everyone says we must sort out the NHS, lo and behold, but then have privatisation, which a lot of people can't afford. So it is very much a kind of engineering of hysteria, painting the police in a certain light. And they do have a difficult job to do. But of course, everyone's saying, no, reform the police. Look at them. They're terrible. They're anti-Semitic and they're all rapists. Obviously, Wayne Cousins and the other serial rapist, Derek, forget his name now, Carrick, he was jailed for being a serial rapist. He was Met Police. So, of course, you get all these so-called bad apples or bad examples, these one-offs of policing, and people are very quick to say we need to overhaul the service. Well, don't be too quick to overhaul the service, because you might get something that the government wants that is not good for the people at all. These engineered encounters, they do have the desired effect. And of course, we live in a very sensationalist, clickbait headline society. So you look at the headline, people very rarely go beyond that headline. But like you say, you've been kind of drilling down on what's behind this. Maybe quite all is not quite what it seems. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, look, don't get me wrong. I'm no fan of the police anymore. I was brought up to respect the police, but from what I've seen of them after the last 4 years, I think a lot of them are absolutely deplorable, particularly the TSG, the riot police, who battered innocent people in the freedom rallies for 2 years or more when they could get away with it, particularly the early ones where they were very, very heavy-handed at people just using their fundamental freedoms to go out and assemble and protest against something that the government was doing that they believed was wrong, which is our right, which is our fundamental freedom, and they shouldn't be taking it away. And I remember, you know, a friend of mine getting roughly manhandled into a police van simply for speaking at Speaker's Corner, you know, which apparently was not allowed for a few weeks or months during the lockdown period. I mean, that's absolutely deplorable. And the police officers that were doing that were relishing their job. But here's someone we can get, we can, you know, make him our prisoner. It was like a big game to them, you know. So some of the people there, you know, are clearly psychopaths and narcissists. And, you know, I think policing has very much gone wrong. It's gone away from community policing, where the, you know, a lot of them used to be, the majority used to be in the job because they want to keep people safe. But now a lot of people seem to be on a big power trip. So I don't know. But then you do have to also be aware of this outrage farming, these engineered incidents, which then, as you say, lay the groundwork for another agenda to come in with more draconian policing, or perhaps even banning protests altogether, you know, but on the basis that they are hate marches, which we have to be very much on our guard against, and really look at when this is happening and look at what incidents are actually genuine, and we need to discern them from what are engineered for an agenda, for a certain narrative. And I would say this is certainly, while the police officer didn't respond to it in the best way, the people who are engineering this love that, because, you know, this is there to generate outrage, and it has done. So, yeah, we need to think very carefully about this and what we want in the future. Anyway, Gemma, thank you so much for bringing those stories. You've inspired me to talk a lot, because this is a very interesting story. Anyway, thank you so much, Gemma, and see you again tomorrow. This is today's News Talk, TNT.
TNT's Alex Zaharoff-Roy.
They need to expand the number of places and countries that can make power processors, and Intel has actually made chips designed with ARM designs for years. This deal will give Intel's foundries, two of which are being built in the US at a cost of $20 billion, more chips to make. Now, TSMC has received $6.6 billion from the Biden administration towards its much-delayed 3 and 4 nanometer chip foundries in Arizona. So while we went from a drought of chips during the pandemic, the second half of this decade should see even more chips being manufactured than ever before, which the world will need, considering the AI boom currently underway will need ever more computing power to satisfy the ever-growing demand.
Talking Tech with Alex Zaharoff-Reut on today's News Talk, TNT. TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission.
Ladies and gentlemen,
today's News Talk.
News and information.
TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the David Curtin Show here on today's News Talk, TNT. And it's really good to have with me as my first guest, Hugh McCarthy, who has been a primary school head teacher, doing that job for 23 years, I think, something like that, and is also the director of two of Northern Ireland's major education council, and also a member of Panda and Collateral Global, which looks into the backlash of the COVID pandemic and all those kind of things that happened. Anyway, Hugh, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a post-primary school, actually, that I was a principal of, just to, for the record.
Oh, yeah, no, thank you. Thank you so much. Well, I mean, I would like to ask you about things to do with education. But just before I delve into that, I specifically want to ask you about the RSE and how that is in Northern Ireland, because I know that's something that people are very, very concerned about. But just as you've been involved in education for such a long time, you know, you were a head teacher, what sort of changes in general have you seen in education over the decades since you started up to now?
Well, I think schools are much more open and much more accessible and much more accountable. Parents listening to this will probably perhaps disagree with that. But I do remember talking to the chair of my governor's, who was a local clergyman, and saying we're accessible authority. As we know, you can't meet a bank manager or anyone like that these days to give off to. Whereas schools are relatively open, as our ministers, and the frustrations of society tended to walk in through the door. That was one thing. And so we're accessible and I think more accountable, and I think it's a good thing. The second thing I was going to say was, I think too, there's a different relationship between the teachers and children. I think it is more respectful than it was in, shall I say, my earlier days, and much more attempt is made to make it what should be a collaborative, cooperative effort. I think those are the two things that have changed most. I think the curriculum and school's modalities are largely the same as when we were at school.
Okay, that is something that maybe, you know, I don't know if everyone would see that, but that, I mean, that's great. And you see that in Northern Ireland there where you are. But I know some people are very concerned, perhaps, that with this relationships and sex education coming in all over, you know, it's coming in England through the Tories, Wales through Labour, in Scotland through the SNP, and in Northern Ireland it's happening as well. And I know there's been a lot of backlash against this. I mean, what is the situation with this relationships and sex education specifically in Northern Ireland at the moment?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, it's more the amendments to RSE. Schools have always taught elements of that. And secondly, actually very appropriate that we're speaking today, because the Alliance Party is introducing an attempt to mandate it across Northern Ireland. In my view, we're starting at the wrong place. I would have thought it might have been, should have been preferable to start at the acts that lead to sexual relationships, and sexual relationships with minors are of course illegal and inappropriate. So we should really be starting from that point. I'm all for applying science and the law, as long as actually that's exactly what we do. The Secretary of State, to answer your question directly, the Secretary of State ushered in just before the establishment of the devolved government these amendments to relationships and sexuality in the school curriculum. Our issue is who should decide what is appropriate and when it's appropriate. Are these really matters for school? I'm in agreement with the Minister of Education. These are not matters for school. These are matters for perhaps church, and certainly for parents, to decide their value systems in relation to this. Schools should be responsible for teaching, reading, writing, volcanoes, maths, and elements of this issue. But the nitty-gritty of it is a value system for parents, and that's where it should be left. And that's what the law says, actually. The law in Northern Ireland, set down by the Education Reform Order, makes it quite clear, and the Secretary of State underpinned it in Westminster, that the Board of Governors is responsible for the determination of the curriculum in Northern Ireland schools. And It should be in accordance with the ethos of the school, period. Now, what the Alliance Party is seeking to do today, in my understanding, is override parental involvement in the determination of the curriculum. And the Education Reform Order was introduced specifically to give parents a say in the running of the schools. Now, that's a long answer because it's a complicated issue and people out there need to know their rights and enforce them, not allow political parties to ride roughshod over parental rights in this matter. And they're quite clear.
I really appreciate your long answer because, I mean, it seems like the situation in Northern Ireland is far, far better than the situation in the other parts of the United Kingdom, where you've got this Education Reform Act that specifically enshrines the parents' rights as primary educators of their children, and also for the ethos of the school to be set by the Board of Governors, who hopefully will be accountable to parents as well, which is how it should be.
Parents should, and I realise we have a short amount of time, but it is incumbent upon parents to establish who is on their Board of Governors and how they got there. Mm. The majority of schools in Northern Ireland are church-based because of our history, Catholic and state. Mm. There are four church representatives in pretty much every Board of Governor in Northern Ireland and four parent representatives. That's a majority of the governors. Mm. Now, they should be setting the ethos. And the Board of Governors cannot change its curriculum policy without consulting parents. Mm. These things are enshrined in our law. Parents need not only to know it, but to do something about it.
Yeah, excellent. Well, we'll have a quick break, news break now. We'll come back and continue talking about this in a minute's time. This is today's News Talk, TNT.
We do have some big news. Listen up.
Now, TNT Radio News.
Matt Boylan here with your TNT headlines. News Corp Australia has come under fire for publishing a hit piece on Australian-born journalist and WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange. Two Japanese Navy helicopters carrying eight crew members have crashed into the Pacific Ocean during a nighttime training exercise off Tokyo. A volley of rockets were fired at an American military base in northeastern Syria on Sunday. And Moscow's accused Ukraine of targeting Russian journalists stationed on the front line.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah. 24/7, 365. We never stop sifting fact from fiction, misinformation from the truth. From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad. Listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the David Curtin Show on today's News Talk, TNT. Now, Hugh McCarthy is here. Hugh's from Northern Ireland. When we were talking about relationships and sex education and how the situation is in Northern Ireland, which is a little bit different to how it is in England, Scotland and Wales. Every different part of the United Kingdom seems to be approaching this in different ways and as a certain different levels of progress in this. Obviously, I'm against rolling back anything that is harmful to children. And now, Hugh, you were just explaining how there were quite a lot of protections in the law in Northern Ireland against introducing very sexualized content, which be the kind of things we've seen in other parts of the UK where children are encouraged to learn about self-stimulation, for example, when they're really young, and transgenderism and all of this kind of stuff. But then you also mentioned there's this party called the Alliance. Now, I know what that is, but maybe people in England, Scotland, and Wales don't know what the Alliance is. And who are they allied to, and what are they doing to undermine parents' rights, and will they be successful?
Well, the power-sharing executive in Northern Ireland has five parties. Two, broadly speaking, pro the union with the UK. Two, pro a united Ireland. And the Alliance Party sort of in the middle. And the Alliance Party originally was established for to promote civil liberties. It does appear to have moved far from that. And its COVID policies were very totalitarian. It wanted to mandate those things which it couldn't get agreement over. And it seems to be doing it again. In Stormont, we're having a debate and probably a vote on whether they can pass this into law. Will they be successful? Well, as with many things in Northern Ireland, it's evenly balanced. It has to be said, the Minister of Education represents a party which is opposed to what you've just described. And I would advise any parent to read or at least check either in my Substack, but to read the WHO standards for sexuality in education and the international technical guidance, and it'll make your hair stand on end. One of the things it starts with, and this is where the ideology is wrong, a child is regarded as being a sexual being from the beginning. For me, that's
shocking.
And what, I mean, I have them, and you don't have time here. I have the abbreviated version beside me. What is required for 6 and 9 year olds about gender diversity and that you can change your gender just like that? Now, what should have happened here? I'm all for them for applying the evidence. But those countries which led us into this, based on a thing called a Dutch protocol, introduced by a Finnish doctor, Dr. Kaltiali, are actually leading us out. She's reviewed the evidence and found that the evidence supporting transition was faulty and flawed, based on a very small sample. And she has totally reversed her position after setting up gender transition clinics. So the countries which let us in are now leading us out, except Northern Ireland is slow. The CAS report should have ended this. The CAS report, and I'll quote, if I may, let's get the words right. The National Health Service redrafted guidelines to remind doctors. So why should teachers or politicians change this? That children may be simply going through a transient phase, and they now recommend clinical management procedures, talking with. The report goes on to say allowing children to socially transition could have significant effects on them. It could indeed. Better information was needed on the outcomes. And the research is quite clear. Of the order of 80% of the children who socially transition, who are minded to, will actually grow out of it, at least 80%. And the evidence is equally clear that those who do socially transition are, Swedish research found that sex reassigned individuals had the worst outcomes in morbidity, psychiatric ill health, and mortality, like suicide. I'm all for the Alliance Party following the science, but let's follow the science.
Well, let's hope they do and they don't follow ideology, because it seems over the last 10 years we've just had this gender ideology and queer theory, which has come out of crazy academic, you know, institutions. Well, in institutions that have got a good reputation, but the stuff that they've been churning out is absolute nonsense. I mean, anyone with, you know, just any common sense could have seen that this is absolute nonsense from the beginning. But now it's come to the point where we've got the CAS report, which is being taken seriously because it's a, you know, UK government sanctioned report. Let's hope that they take note of that. And I'm really glad you mentioned the World Health Organization and their grid for what children should be learning at different ages, because that's where a lot of it comes from. It's coming from the globalist sphere and it's being implemented in different nations.
Could I also point out there that the WHO in the small print recognizes that one size doesn't fit all. That's the phrase it uses. And it recognizes the role of parents and faith-based organizations. But you don't hear that. But that's part of that same document. It cover fastens the rights of churches and parents, actually.
Well, that's a good thing. And that's not something that we hear, because it seems the people that are pushing this are just completely hell-bent on bringing this, deviant teaching, as I would say, to children, and things that would sexualize them. But I hope that, the parliament there, or Stormont anyway, that the ministers in Stormont don't vote for this. But, if they do, it seems it would go against what's actually been set in law in Northern Ireland already, which seems to give them children and parents much more protection than what you have in England, Scotland and Wales. So I've got a comment from you for you from a listener. Kathy Gray says, thank you, Hugh, for speaking out today and all your hard work around this awful situation. And so I would thank you as well, because we all need to stand up together. Everyone is decent. Everyone who cares about children and doesn't want them to be confused and twisted by activists. We need to speak out, and we need to speak up. And I would just say, let kids be kids. Why would anyone want to put this crazy gender ideology on kids, especially primary school kids? They should just be left alone to play and learn things which are of benefit to them, not to be, have all this sexualizing degenerate material pushed in their faces. So our last comment to you, Hugh, we just got a minute or so, but anything else you want to say at the end about, what's going on in Northern Ireland?
Yes, parents, let me remind you, have the right to say no. You have the right to withdraw your child. You've a right to know the curriculum and a right to withdraw your child from parts of it with which you do not agree. As you said, David, you can oppose it morally, scientifically, or legally, but just say no.
Fantastic. Just say no and protect your children. Thank you so much, Hugh, for joining me on today's News Talk, TNT.
Anticipate potential delays for the morning commute. In other news, a recent government report on prescription drug pricing points to corporate malfeasance.
Freedom of the press is about your right to know.
What are you talking about, man? Look at his stats.
It's about your right to be informed. Your right to access all types of information keeps us free as a nation.
No.
Today, there are real threats to press freedom.
Reaching residential areas by...
And your right to know about the world around us.
Look.
Some threats are obvious, some are easy to miss, but they all put our way of life at risk. We must defend against all of these threats, no matter what kind of news is important to you.
Justified putting American troops in harm's way?
That's a great question.
We must protect our right to know before it's too late. Understand the threats. ProtectPressFreedom.org.
Food isn't just fuel to live, it's fuel to grow. My family relied on public assistance to help provide meals for us. These meals fueled my involvement in theater and the arts as a child, which fostered my love for acting. The Feeding America network of food banks helps millions of people put food on the table. When people are fed, futures are nourished. Join the movement to end hunger, and together we can open endless possibilities for people to thrive. Visit feedingamerica.org/act now.
Discussing national and international issues. This is the David Curtin Show on today's News Talk, TNT.
Welcome back to the David Curtin Show. This is today's News Talk, TNT. I'm delighted to have with me on the show now in this section, Jana London, who is the leader and founder of the Natural Women's Council in the Republic of Ireland. Jana, welcome to the show.
Thank you, David. Thanks for having me this morning.
No, really good to have you on the show. Now, well, you're doing some really important work there in the Republic of Ireland, and I guess it's going to spread out wider than that with your organisation, because you're just talking about really common sense things that affect us all, not just women. But tell us a bit more about the Natural Women's Council and why and how did you start it?
Yeah, so the Natural Women's Council, we're a group, a small grassroots not-for-profit organization made up of really about 25 women sort of in our private core working group, but then we have thousands across the country who support the work we do. How was it started? It was back in July 2022, and we were campaigning at that time still, I think, against some of those draconian COVID measures that were affecting the children in Ireland with all the lockdowns, school closures and masks. And I was outside on a sunny day hanging out the laundry, and I got a call from someone we work closely with in the Lawyers for Justice Ireland to say, did you realize they're trying to erase the word woman from the Constitution under Article 10, 11 and 12 of the Maternity Protection Acts? And I thought, erase? Women Maternity Act, that doesn't make sense. So we decided to do what we thought was going to be a small gathering outside our government buildings, Leinster House in Dublin, to really celebrate women. It wasn't a protest. It was, this is celebrating women. We won't be erased. We aren't going away. And on that day, we actually launched the idea of a women's council on 7/7/2022. And luckily, the government reverse that ludicrous decision to erase women from the Maternity Protection Acts to cater to transgender men who breastfeed. But fast forward just a couple of months ago, they ran a referendum in Ireland, once again trying to erase the word woman, mother and home from our constitution. And luckily, the public at this point completely woke up to these tactics and the overall agenda, and really did. You know, even people who didn't know the details of the referendum, because we got 100,000 leaflets out to campaign on the referendum. We had thousands of conversations. Even people who didn't know the details of the referendum said, anything the government is pushing, I'm going to silently protest at the ballot box and say no. And it was a landslide no, 75%. So I don't think the government was prepared for the they're not used to having such a large group of people dislike them. And I think it was a real eye opener for the government, who wasn't reading the room, to say the people of Ireland have had enough of the government's failed policies, which are coming from unelected, unaccountable, untaxed global entities like the United Nations, WHO and WEF. The people have had enough, and things are really heating up over here.
Well, I was so happy to hear about the results of that referendum, because we talked about that, I covered that. It was last month, wasn't it? It was no and no. And I really genuinely think that the people in the government thought that they were going to win. They had no idea that, you know, they're pushing this, what I would call cultural Marxist ideology or progressive ideology. But the people that just want to be left alone and just, you know, don't want things to change, you know.
Just let us live. Don't erase women. Don't erase mothers. Don't erase home. Protect our children. People really want to be left alone. And it came out after the referendum, some documents that were produced, if you follow Grift Media, the government had information ahead of the referendum on the impacts, particularly on immigration. Direction and advice from the Attorney General. They had it ahead of the referendum, refused to publish it under Freedom of Information Act request until after the referendum. So the government used 20 million euros of our public funds for this nonsensical referendum, whilst hiding documents, spreading misinformation. Even the director of the National Women's Council of Ireland, which get 1 million a year in our public funding to advocate for women, they were spreading blatant information. The media was spreading misinformation, but luckily the people were much wiser than the government thought.
Absolutely. Wise, that's a very good word, because you're just sticking to traditional values that we've always had. And then there's all these people come along and they say, we need to change that. It just doesn't make any sense. But, you know, that's good. But these people don't stop, do they? They lose, and then they push, pull back for a little bit, and then they come back with something else. So, I mean, you made a video, I think, just recently on X. It was like about what's happening in Ireland this month in April 2024. So what is happening? And what are you thinking about at the moment?
Yeah, what is happening? I think it would be easier to answer what isn't happening, but there's a few things that are all coming at us at once. And the most immediate thing, I won't say the most urgent because there's so many issues, but the most immediate thing is the EU migration pact, which is coming at us. And they want to push this through without any debate. We've had a few independents, such as Michael McDougall, who's very well respected, and Sharon Keoghan speaking out against this, TD Carol Nolan. A handful have been speaking out against the dangers of this EU migration pact. So we're encouraging everyone to write to their TD, visit their TD, call their TD, pile on to the TDs to say, we do not, as the people of Ireland, we do not opt into this EU migration pact. Ireland is already at tipping point with our reckless open borders. We have 13,000 Irish homeless, 4,000 are children. We have hospital wait lists that are years long. We have a couple hundred children waiting for spinal surgery. I mean, it's not that the Irish people aren't kind and welcoming, but we have to look after our own people of Ireland before we can flood the borders with thousands more. And particularly the ones coming in, thousands have been, even though they're telling us they're Ukrainian women, when you walk through the villages and towns, these are single unvetted men. They are not Ukrainian. They are not women, no matter how they're identifying. And people in the villages and towns are terrified. But when they protest and speak up and say, we don't want these thousands of men to be put in our town, we don't have the amenities, it's not safe, they are labeled with absolute, you know, the government shouting visceral labels at the people, like myself, being called the labels that are, you know, past their sell-by date, the far right, the bigots, the transphobics, now it's extremists. So you can tell the government is panicking and they've lost the room when they double down and try to label the people and discredit people more. That's a sign that the truth is coming out. Gender ideology is making its way into every aspect of our society, including schools. But luckily, the CAS report was impeccable timing against that. So people can see that teaching boys they can be girls and girls they can be boys in the school curriculum. And the primary school draft submission is open until June 7th. But parents, once again, have not been invited to that consultation. It's very much hidden. So we're doing a campaign on that. But that will be teaching primary school children, age five, that they can be a boy, girl, neither or both. When clearly the CAS report shows the dangers of, you know, transitioning children, even socially transitioning, leads them to those irreversible, dangerous puberty blockers. So parents need to wake up and just say, no, we're not asking for this.
Well, you've already got movements in place, you know, particularly in Wales with Public Child Protection Wales, and you know, they're quite established. So it's really good that you're doing something in the Republic of Ireland to fight what's going on there, because I mean, this is a horror. And you know, as I said to our previous guest from Northern Ireland, we talked about a similar thing, because it's been pushed there as well. Kids should just be left alone. You know, they shouldn't be exposed to adult sexualities, adult ideologies, which are, you know, crazy for most adults. You know, they're fringe for adults. It certainly shouldn't be for kids.
It should not be for kids. And some of the content we've seen, we did a library book campaign that we launched last January 2023, whereby we launched a very peaceful campaign. We developed a letter that was written for us by our Lawyers for Justice Ireland to encourage people to go into the library, look through the children's section and any books that weren't appropriate, peacefully serve the library staff with a notice of liability, a public notice of liability. Now, of course, the media and the government twisted it to say the far right thugs are threatening library staff. These are the same people burning down immigration centers. I mean, they really went for us and they just tried to destroy many of us. But we went out and said, let's talk about the content of the books. We are not against the LGB community in any way. The trans movement is actually anti-gay. Teaching people they're in the wrong body, regardless of how they feel or what sex, you know, what sex they're attracted to. So we are not against our gay community, despite what the media twisted. And we went out with that content and it shocked people. And we just did a recent film production that everyone should be looking forward to called Storytime for the Irish Mammy. And we're doing an 8-part series, about 2 minutes each, that's going to go all through social media in the next week. Whereby we're going to be reading some library books and school curriculum books that parents can see what their children are being taught. So that's going to be a real shocker to keep your eyes on.
I've seen some things like that from the USA where they have open school board meetings. It's a different kind of culture. You don't have them here, but I've seen some of the things where parents read out from books which are in the school libraries and they get told to be quiet by the very school boards that have allowed those books and bought them to go into the library, which
it's lunacy. I was on a recent radio show last year with Philip Boucher Hayes, Joe Duffy's sidekick, and they were defending these books and implying that women and mothers like me were trying to take Ireland back to the dark ages and we're prudes. And I said, well, let me just read you something from that book. No, this is daytime radio. I said, no, I'm going to read it because it's in the age 12 library section. And he had to give the viewers a warning and I read it. And let's just say it wasn't my most proud book reading, but it got the message across when I read those words from that book.
Well, I mean, it's really good that you did. And I think, you know, we're at the point where people maybe they need to be shocked by actually hearing what is in some of these things. And if adults can be shocked, then clearly this is not correct to give these things to children, even children as young as 4 and 5. But it's all coming in lockstep with different countries. All the countries around the world, and the states in the USA, the countries in the EU, all seem to be implementing this at the same time. So this is something that's coming from above, isn't it?
Absolutely. People always ask me, where is this coming from? I don't remember when politicians knocked on my door asking for votes, telling me this was going to happen. So people need to realize that everything that's happened in the last few years that doesn't feel right, it's all connected. It's all being driven by the United Nations, the WHO, and the WEF. And in 2019, the United Nations and WEF joined together. They're really one and the same. That happened in, I think, summer of 2019, coincidentally, 6 months before the COVID era. And the WHO, any document, every one of your listeners should look up, it's public document, the WHO Standards of Sexuality in Europe. That's a very long document, but in the document is a matrix. And that matrix, anytime somebody says that this isn't coming into children's schools, I say, look at this document. It talks about things like teaching age 4 masturbation in the schools, teaching age 9 about their first sexual experience. So this is really a really damning document that everybody should look at, and shows everybody who the WHO and United Nations really is. But what I will tell people is, what's happening in the foreground should concern us. You said, what's happening in Ireland? The EU migration pact. We're already at tipping point. We cannot flood our borders. Ireland has the right to opt out like Denmark. So EU migration pact. There's the hate speech bill Minister Helen McEntee wants to push through. This is her pet project she's been trying to push through for the last year without success, which will silence people and criminalize us for our thoughts, not our actions. Our homes can be raided by Garda. They can ask for our devices and passwords and criminalize us based on something that wasn't even done. The sexualization of children. But what we need to look at is not what's in the foreground, but what's more concerning is what's in the background. So everything happening is terrible and it's chaotic, and it's very important that it will affect our lives forever. But what's happening in the background is even worse. And we have to say, are they purposely distracting us by what we're seeing to hide what we're not seeing? And what we're not seeing right now is something called, it's not made it into any mainstream papers, is the WHO treaty and international health regulations. This is a treaty that will take over the nation state's sovereignty, every aspect of life on planet Earth. It includes things like agriculture. Think of our independent farmers. So our food sovereignty. It includes climate in there, LGBT, the education, our health freedom. So whatever anyone's view is on what health choices they make, their views are irrelevant. What is irrelevant is we should have the freedom to make those choices. So this treaty is due to be ratified the week of May 27th. And the minister, health minister, Stephen Donnelly, is flying over to try to sign Ireland's sovereignty away. The optimism is that countries are waking up to this. And if you look at the news in Louisiana in the US, they voted unanimously 37-0 against this WHO treaty. Excellent. So people need to really say, this is really the most important thing happening behind the scenes, is what they're not telling us is this WHO treaty. So we did an event in Ireland on the 6th of February. We flew in some world experts on this issue, and also some fantastic MEPs like Christine Anderson and Andrew Bridgen, and some doctors, Kat Lindley, Tess Laurie, Meryl Nass, as well as a lawyer, Philip Cruze, all flew to Ireland to meet with all of our parliamentarians here to say, this is why you should not sign the treaty. So we went into the Dáil, and that meeting happened. And then we did a public meeting across the road at a hotel. Of the hundreds of parliamentarians in Ireland that were invited, guess how many attended to hear about this important information on our sovereignty and freedom?
Well, I'd imagine about 2.
You're exactly right. There were 2. You must have seen my tweet.
No, I haven't, but that's about the number that would attend in the UK. I mean, they're so pathetic, the MPs.
That just shows the contempt.
Yeah. They're all in parties that are supporting this. They're in parties that are supporting the globalist agenda, Agenda 2030, the 17 Sustainable Development Goals, and the WHO pandemic preparedness treaty is all part of this. And I know that there are some countries in Africa who are very much against it. Isn't it crazy that our hope for freedom in the world lies with countries in the global south, in Africa, in South America, and so on? We hope that they are going to vote in large enough numbers to overturn.
That's true. And in Ireland, you know, it's really like the Irish government clearly has a serious contempt for particularly all of the people here. They're not listening to the people. These are policies driven from the top down, whereas the government should be implementing policies from the bottom up, from the people who pay their wages. But it's coming from the top down, and the government have contempt for the Irish people, but particularly for the working class of Ireland. The government has really vilified the working class, common, decent people like myself, who are out on the street talking to people, leafleting, doing live events. Those people have absolutely been vilified by the government, they're trying to silence them. But that is a sign that we're winning. And in fact, Leo Varadkar, who just stepped down as a party leader there, our former Taoiseach in Taoiseach, Leo Varadkar flew over to New York last September for a big summit, big global WEF United Nations summit. Now, not many people knew that Ireland co-chaired that summit. So Ireland is in the cockpit, the belly of the beast. But it was very optimistic. I have the article here. Leo Varadkar
I know we would like to talk about Leo Varadkar. Well, actually, probably wouldn't want to talk about Leo Varadkar too much. But coming to the end of the show, and you've spoken about all of these things, which I know everyone is very, very concerned about. But we have to defeat this WHO pandemic treaty. That's one of the most important things.